Whatever it
is. There we go.
How about?
It is 9:07 a.m. on Monday morning, September 20th. Good morning, America. We are here.
Good morning,
Washington. I call the Committee on Public Safety and Security to order. And we have a quorum of legislative boroughs, Parkham, Burton, and myself. Good morning, everybody. This is like a stepchild. So this committee is like 9 o'clock. We sort of squeeze in. I'm glad we're starting. I'm impressed we're here. But 10 o'clock, we get squeezed out by budget. So I thought today, we heard a bunch of stuff last week. I apologize. The addendum is got it to when I could. Just kind of have a little bit of a generate more questions, maybe answer some questions amongst ourselves. Just kind of see where we're going, take it to the next step.
Well, what's the focus
on the consolidation?
Consolidation.
Let me just say a couple of quick things. I just saw, and I'll give you my theory on this. I saw in the paper over the weekend that Ossining is getting close. I guess they're taking a vote in the next week or so. You represent Ossining.
I do.
Right? Right, they're getting close.
Would you like to run down from only second hand?
Well, let me say, they will be voting, it looks like, on the county proposal to merge with the Ossining town.
The town board, which has a small police force of 17 sworn, began over the summer a discussion with the county of possibly signing a contract with the county to have the county run.
I will ask you at some point. Okay. That. I just in terms of philosophies here, at the end of the day, there's a whole history to this with the village and the town. Chairman Jenkins said to me, why don't we get into it? They're going to do this. Why don't we have him here and talk about my philosophy, subject to be debated, is it's like a treaty. You know, the president negotiates a treaty, it's done. Then it goes to Congress and they can pass it, not pass it. I decided, rather than get in the middle of whatever negotiation, then it got complicated, the village was putting different proposals on the table, and my feeling was, let it work its way out. If in fact the town decides to go with the county, and the county has laid out a proposal, they shake hands, they vote on it, it's done from their perspective. My understanding is, I think we still have to, I think there's a role, man, I assume.
Well, there will be a contract which will come before the board.
Okay, so the contract, so at that point, it seems to me, my philosophy is let them work it out. But they also, all the players should know, like a treaty, it's subject to whatever action, and I need to really understand what that action is.
And I support you on that.
So is that
that strategy exactly correct?
Okay.
I believe that's the only way to do it.
Let them do it.
Okay, I just didn't want to, what was the point of us trying to be at the negotiating table? So that was a position I've taken. So even though it's maybe something in the news, they're getting together, it's a cat. When it comes to us, it comes to us. As long as the parties, they should be told that everything they do is subject to certain board action. And with that, we'll let them go. They may never vote, they may never do it. So that's where that issue stands.
Yep.
So that's okay. So if you're supportive as the local legislator, you're supportive with that approach in this, Gordon, we sort of agree. Hands off until it comes to us, and then we do what we want with, Okay, that's that. Morning, Mr. Ryan has joined us. So again, and to the extent maybe you've been getting some emails which are helping you kind of see the issues, raise questions. Again, I just wanted sort of a work session today. We have the proposal, we have the addendum, which, again, a couple issues that I saw, so let me just start it off then, and then obviously it's open for just this give and take. The addendum makes it clear that the consolidation plan was driven by economic considerations. So it was last week, I'm saying, all right, Mike's committee was kind of looking at the consolidation and savings, and we're looking at the substance. It clearly now, directions from the Ninth Ward being driven by economic consideration. So all the more reason we need to make sure that there's no sacrifice, if you will, of any shortchanging of any of the services by the driving economic. So it kind of even focuses our attention, I think, we have to look at it that much more closely because it's not really being done. Their efficiencies, obviously the commissioner has made it very clear, and that's really the biggest, strongest argument to me, is unified command, so it's the argument is on efficiencies, but at the end of the day, it's being driven by economic considerations. So those two issues are still there. I reviewed again with the commission just to make sure I can help focus the discussion. He's really looking for the sort of back office operations to move first. The HR, the budget, the grants. That can happen fairly quickly. It comes down to me, so put this on the table for discussion. It's kind of, you can go two ways, it seems to me. Keep them separate entities and work with IMAs and whatever whatever issues that are rising now. Have an IMA on, you know, CPR training, because they both do CPR trainings. All right, you want to have a joint CPR training? Have agreements on a whole bunch of things. Have those agreements, yet keep them on paper separate. Or the balance shifts the other way. You have one, and I would argue if we did go to one, I might suggest we change the name. So it's Commissioner of Public Safety and Emergency Services. I'm not big on form over substance. I mean, generally, that's not, you like to look at good government. But I think for starters, if we did go in one direction, it might make sense. So it's more of a level playing field. That is, in fact, the Commissioner of Public Safety and Emergency Services. We sort of end up, the addendum makes it clear, there's all these silos, everyone's going to have their separate dealings, but at the end of the day, there's a unified command structure. We may want to obviously bring the commissioner back to kind of go through that again, so if we get to that, we'll really understand it, as he's explained to me. When it's all said and done, you have situations today, and again, this could be changed with IMAs, but you have Tony Sutton, and he'll tell me, Chief Inspector Hodges, you know, they're both on the scene for something, and they're kind of looking at you. And that may just be a failure currently of not having their act together with some kind of protocols in place. I mean, that's what we tell you. So there may be a couple ways of solving that, but one way is putting someone ultimately in charge and have that. So I see two sides. I mean, I'm really open on this. Just I'm just really open on this. I don't have a real vested interest in, historically. I'm coming to this issue relatively new, and I see keeping, you know, separate but equal with a lot of IMAs and protocols, or put them together if that's a little more efficient and, you know, makes sense. So I don't know. Anybody want to go? Bill, put your comments on the floor.
I was at three different Firematic events between Friday and last night. In every one of them, the five chiefs that I saw, one time or another, came up to me and said, "This is bad for us." When you pursue it a little further, it turns out to be two things. First is a culture clash. Firefighters know, whether they're right or wrong, that the police are a paramilitary organization. When somebody says jump, you jump. And that they know, and whether they're right or wrong, that volunteers require a great deal of hand-holding and directing, because after all, they're not paid. Professional firefighters, who I don't have in my district, so I have not seen them, but it's my understanding that the professional firefighters are of a similar mode, for different reasons, and I can't speak to that. But the volunteer service is very concerned that regardless of what physical structure is created, that they will wind up being second-class citizens. And I'm not altogether sure this is resolvable. If it's going to happen, it's going to be a shotgun marriage. And that may or may not be a good thing. But as the administration points out, inasmuch as the consolidation plan is driven by economic considerations, it occurs to me that if we go at this question of taking these two departments and slimming them down in such a way that produces equivalent or more or less equivalent dollar savings, that there may be no need to do this. But I'm not sure. And that is for people like Jose and Bob Boland and Ann and those who really can get into the innards of this sort of thing to tell us whether or not we can get a slimmed down version of the two departments without pushing them together. I remain skeptical, but I'm not opposed at this point to the proposal. I actually stood with my capitalists, as a number of us did, in proposing this back in December. And as we acknowledged at the time, it was pretty much a skim off the top sort of thing without having gotten into the details. We were looking again at economics. I'm actually glad that the administration is taking this approach, that it's an economic decision, because then we'll see whether we can make this work on an economic basis without really damaging the morale and the the willingness to continue to work of the volunteer service, which is very important to me, as not only a member of it, but also as a community, representing communities that are universally served by volunteers.
Okay, we've been joined by John Nolan and Judy Myers. Let me ask you a question. I know Bill, because Bill really has, all have roles, and Bill has a history as the chairman, the former chairman of this committee.
That's right.
Let me ask you a question. We'll put this on the table. Other counties have, you know, county fire, county police, and there's, you know, really issues there. What I'm kind of dealing with, because again, I'm relatively new, we don't have a, you know, I'm looking at the fire, if you will, the fire role of the county. Communications and training, as I understand it. So it's not. So when the firefighters, you know, express their opinion to you of you know, their concerns, explain to me, you know, we're not getting into the firefighting role. We don't have a county firefighting role. So is it, you know, so the culture change, and but in terms of, you know, substance of getting into their jobs, what, let's see, maybe you can answer, Pete, you want, I mean,
to that point, if I may, Mr. Burke, I got a lot of the same messages that Legislator Burton did, and in fact I raised it, if you remember last week, about the culture clash. But some of that came about because of the initial proposal was not particularly clear, and a number of the fire services felt that through things that had been articulated in the document, perhaps not as clearly as they could have been, things about like the hazmat team, that the technical rescue team were not clearly laid out, and in the addendum now they're saying yes, we're keeping those intact. There are still questions about whether the leadership of those will stay intact, because the last document seemed to indicate that those might roll over to police command or police function. So the thing I think we still need to clarify is yes, we're keeping the volunteer tech rescue and hazmat team. But what about the leadership? There's some folks there who are thought of very highly by the fire services. They would like to see them stay. It's those little things, and it's those joint incidents like hazmat, tech rescue, those kind of things, where people are curious about what the chain of command will be on site. But that's a specific question about that. Some of the other questions have I think been addressed in here. In our first meeting, we were told that, you know, for instance, the regional fire coordinators, the way they listed it, they were becoming outside contractors, and what they said to me was, hey, we're not going to do this without insurance, blah, blah, blah. And the commissioners said, no, that was a technical thing. That will all remain the same. So those are the kind of little bits of information we have to keep finding out and keep getting out there, because the initial document, I think, created some confusion about that. And the more answers we get to that, I think we'll get back to your point where they're you know, it's generally a separate chain of command. They will be they will not be impacted if we can get those answers. And just quickly to your point, if I can, I think that, you know, if we're going to have shared things, I think we've got to merge the departments if we're going to go that route. I think it gets muddied when you have IMAs and interdepartmental agreements, because it still, it comes down to chain of command and turf and those kind of things. So, you know, I think either we do it or we don't do it, but, you know, more of my questions are being answered. I still have some more, as do my constituents, but I think we're getting there. I think we're getting the answers to some of those questions. And you know, we'll get more as we move forward.
Okay, yeah, and coming out of this, you know, work session today, we kind of raised like these questions, could then go back obviously to the administration to fine tune those, and to the various advisory boards and the other constituents. We still want to hear from all of them, but this was good. Okay, I think Bill.
Yeah, Marty. I think that there are a couple of different ways that we can go with a discussion as we try to, you know, get closer and closer to a final decision on what's been proposed. But one possibility, which was pretty clear to me coming out of last week's meeting, was that there'd be recognition of two, for the most part, two very, very different groups of services that are provided. with public safety, it's police, and not only is it different from emergency services in that the nature of services provided are probably 95% different. There actually are law enforcement responsibilities that the department takes on and addresses those with a force of, I guess at this point, somewhere around 250 officers. I don't know what the exact count is. But there are actually responsibilities. There are patrolling responsibilities on our roadways. There are many, many posts created throughout the county, here in White Plains with the Central County Office Complex and some of the departments such as Social Services. There are posts established here. There are posts established at the airport. There are different posts established throughout the county which require that they be attended to around the clock by officers at the desk or officers on patrol. We also have the need to provide county police to some of the other groups that exist, such as critical incident response, which is a coming together of the federal officials with the FBI and the state law enforcement, county and local. That's a team that addresses acts of terrorism. We have our role where we participate where the incident requires a SWAT response. There are a whole array of services that would be too expensive for local governments to provide. Crime lab, for example. We debate crime lab, and that's a county cost center. Can you imagine that number being addressed by local governments such as the town of Cortland or Peekskill or White Plains or Yonkers? A very large number. None of them could afford to have something like that independent of other communities. So a crime lab is one. All of the CSI functions. You have ballistics, you have drug undercover, you have a wide variety of different functions that we either are primary or we complement local forces with respect to those activities. But once again, they're all pretty much law enforcement, anti-crime type services. There are a couple of overlaps. Bomb response through our bomb truck, the trained personnel, the dogs. This is probably a service that is closer to emergency services whole inventory, all the things they have up on the shelf. I'm not saying that all bombs have to be tied into a crime. Something could just be going through a particular state where it becomes dangerous and it could explode, could warrant a response from our bomb unit. For the most part, I think that the bomb incidents are tied to a crime, and obviously you have built into the response, you have the police protocol which allows them to also address the incident, address the scene as a crime incident, a crime scene. So there are a couple of things like that, but not many. So for the most part, you're dealing with law enforcement, anti-crime type services with a department that has a force on hand of paid county employees who are officers who accomplish a lot of the work of that department. Emergency services, on the other hand, has been known to be in its short lifetime since 1999 an administrative umbrella, so to speak, of all the activities and services that the communities might need to address emergencies that fall into the category of fire, emergency medical, hazardous materials response, responses to the more recent dangers of chemical agents, biological agents, radiological agents, WMDs, natural disasters. All of these types of things require a response. Most of the incidents will tax a community. They will go or require a community go beyond its own local resources. The reason being, today and for years, the only responsibility that communities have had is to provide an adequate first response to an emergency. Once they have provided that adequate first response and there's an assessment made that more resources are needed, they go to the county, and the county has a responsibility as the coordinator of mutual aid for municipal, emergency services. And it goes in, it follows protocols, it has personnel in these centralized roles that then handle a very important function. Primary function is taking the call for aid and dispatching sufficient resources to the scene. Where does it get those resources? Well, 90% of the resources are coming from local communities. Ladder trucks, bottle trucks, water, elevated water sources, tankers, bulldozers, ambulances, this type of thing. The county doesn't have 1,000 vehicles of its own. It, through fleet management software and the computer system, it knows at a moment's notice where everything is. And 60 control can tell what's in use, what's on the street, and what's still in the garage, in the bay, ready to roll. And so it can, at a moment's notice, start rolling resources to the scene. What do we have? We do have rolling stock and special equipment. Anyone who has visited emergency services up at Valhalla knows that once those garage doors open up, you see a wide variety of communications vehicles, specialized equipment for specialized response, things that the county can roll that will complement the response to an emergency that's going on. As you can see, as I'm describing these, very, very different than the police side of things. So in the end, what do we actually have? I think what we have is two very different roles of two departments, and combined, they have an array of services. Some are very, very heavy with respect to law enforcement, anti-crime. Others have nothing to do really with law enforcement or anti-crime. They have to do with responding to the typical emergency that occurs in this county, and each and every day it's primarily emergency medical. So given that, it's clear as you get above the services, above the people who handle those things, you get to the centralized functions, administration, and budget, and HR, and purchasing, and all those types of things. So that's where you start to get the commonality, the back office commonality of the two departments. So one possible way to go, nobody believes that there isn't anything here that can't be looked at and improved upon. You could possibly establish between the two independent departments what you might term as the Office of Joint Command. And that is the coming together of the two commissioners. They comprise the office, and any of the centralized functions that you want to combine, administrative functions, some of the functions I just mentioned, any of those things you could probably combine, IT, for example, that kind of thing. Realize, and they mentioned over time they would be able to sort out who are the best and brightest of the staff that you can keep in a centralized role. Maybe you can take a staff of five and make it three. I don't know what the possibilities are. But the point is, combine the centralized functions that lend themselves to consolidation. Then everything below that, I really think, and I've studied this in the last month or so, after the proposal was given to us, I think probably the smartest way to go, for a number of different reasons, but I think efficiency and to keep logic in the system, the smartest way to go is to keep the service piece of this intact and develop maybe one or two specialized protocols that deal with the bomb response or deal with, in particular cases, the need for a protocol that involves police on the scene in case of a fire, an explosion, whatever it might be, because of the possibility that it may be crime-related after it's ultimately looked at and studied. So you need police presence there from the beginning. But all you need to do is write that piece into the protocol. So you have two separate departments that would exist. You would have the coming together of the two through the two commissioners who could talk and do what they have to do throughout the year to make sure that they're coordinated to the extent that there are some overlapping. And then you'd have the centralized administrative functions there in what would be called the Office of Joint Command. And it would be the only place in government where you would have this tie-in through a formal office. The other possibility is, as you bring up, and I support your idea about I think the name, the identification is very important. It would be, in fact, the Department of Public Safety and Emergency Services, two separate things. You can't lop off one and failing to recognize it. That's a major part of this, responsibility-wise and asset-wise. Within that department, you could establish an Office of Joint Command where you still keep, perhaps, the idea on the table of trying to consolidate as much as you can at the very high back office, high level of administration and back office. However, I at this point probably prefer the former that I described. That would be to keep these operations separate, to look for savings with the combination, and to have that reflected on the organization chart as a newly created Office of Joint Command between the two. For those reasons and those reasons only, that's why there would be a coming together at that level.
Thanks, Bill. Anybody next? John?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Bill. I think the issue here is, you know, what happens at the operational level, as we heard, and concerns about how the merger might affect operations. I attended dinner Saturday night of the Hawthorne Fire Company, and of course a lot of other fire companies attend. I was sitting with Pacaluso, West Harrison, Pleasantville, Thornwood, Valhalla were there. And I think that these fire companies are becoming more comfortable with the idea that I think initially there was a fear and a real concern about their service getting to be the stepchild, but I think if we make an effort to get information and to refine the proposal and allay their fears, they seem to be willing to accept it. I mean, that's the input I got from a number of different departments. I just have a few questions I want to go over and see what other people think. I read the addendum very quickly. I found it on my desk this morning. I don't know if anybody got it sooner. Anybody got a chance to read it? I mean, I
was able to email it last night. Just a confluence of I got it late Friday afternoon with Joan Kipper, and I got it. So last night I had a few emails on my BlackBerry, and those are the ones I could get it. So I apologize. It had everybody's.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. Now we have it. But if you look at, first concern I had was what are the real savings here? I mean, and if you look at pages 5 and 6 is where they're, remember, because we have questions, what are the real savings, down the road? And they're pointing to a number of abolished and vacant positions, I guess, that won't be filled. And they say that the first full year, I guess, post-consolidation will be $3 million, and the second year will be $3.5 million, and the third will be $3.9 million, which are pretty considerable. I would have a question, and this comes back to what Bill Burton said. How many of these are vacancies that would happen without a consolidation? Because it looks like the police officer abolished positions really have nothing to do with the merger. They're independently, they decided three of them are the
county executive's detail. One is cyber crimes, which has nothing to do with emergency services. I knew they had a vacancy in counterterrorism. I knew they weren't going to hire somebody. So I think a lot of those vacancies and abolished positions were going to happen anyway. I think we ought to maybe confirm that. This is on page 5, abolished DPS positions and DPS vacancies. I think we ought to confirm that those would be abolished or kept vacant independent of any merger. Now, when you get to the DES vacancies, I'm not quite sure. The DES vacancies, I'm not sure about that. Because, again, they're eliminating a deputy commissioner, which I think they might not eliminate if there was no merger. So I'm not sure about that.
John, does someone have an answer? Yeah, okay, just address that.
The DPS ones were abolished in the 2010 budget. They're gone.
Yeah,
which ones?
So they're gone anyway.
The up top ones.
616.
Yeah. The others, I don't believe so, but I didn't check those actually over the weekend.
The abolishments, not the vacancies. The abolishments were abolished.
Because you can't abolish in the middle of the year. So right. We abolished those in 2010 when we adopted the 2010 budget.
So we assume,
so
therefore...
that savings was already paid.
That savings was
already paid. Right, so that's already...
616.
Already there, okay. And
it should really tie back to the budget. Whatever we took out of the budget is what this should reflect, the dollars taken out for 2010.
Right. So then we assume, although I don't think they expressly say so, that the DPS vacancies will be abolished. I mean, we should confirm that.
Do we know what the communications operator headcount is? Is this committee?
Yeah, that, see, then when you get
you know
to DES, also I was concerned mutual aid coordinator. You know, what's the rationale for if those vacancies are now going to be abolished positions, what's the rationale other than the deputy commissioner?
Let me address this issue, and I don't have the answer. I mean, I had a conversation with Commissioner Longworth. He gave me an answer. Now I'm looking at this. His statement to me was that he was asked to do, you know, they're all asked to do another 10 plus that 20% cutback this year. That may be his vacancies here, but without going into details, he said he laid out 20%. What he said to me was that Tony Sutton had not, with the consolidation and the total number of savings, according to him, he said there were no DES cuts in that 20%. The consolidation, the DPS cuts, would umbrella the 20%. And he said, if we don't consolidate, then Sutton's got to come in with cuts. Now, looking at this, there seemed to be, you know, vacancies on the bus. So I don't know how what's on paper here squares what he said to me. But he was trying to argue that there would be no DES cuts if the consolidation. And right. Can you address that in some way? Is that, are those, I don't know how the numbers
I mean, I'd have to check a vacancy report. I don't know how many vacancies, you know, DES has. DES, historically, they're always running with comm operator vacancies. That's a hard, you know, place to keep filled. I think they have 22 in the budget. In fact, he upped that by one last year by shifting the position. The other thing that, you know, we should note here is when we look at the savings for positions, fringe is included in these. But fringe is not a part of public safety or emergency services budget. Fringe is budgeted in the miscellaneous budget, you know, on that side of the equation.
Well, without getting into,
actual changes in tax levy, which is what I know that you all look at, you have to recognize one is from another.
Right, now we're not the budget committee, but I do need to go back now. Again, the statements he made to me, if they consolidate, DES gets spared that 20% cut. Now, I don't know how that jives with this, so I need to go back to
I know we're not the budget committee,
right.
but it's, you know, the whole...
It's all tied in, especially when tell us now consolidate, you know, savings is the focus.
This point, if I may, the other thing that's not reflected here is what happens to overtime with all of these vacancies. Because we cut a significant amount of overtime out in the 2010 budget. I'd like to see, and recognizing this isn't the budget committee again, I'd like to see how that has been.
Well, he's cut his overtime. He said, last meeting, he said with the vacancies he has, he's got his overtime down. I mean, he's had so, a set of, so I think there's a two...
That's not going to. I think that he's managing his overtime. He's lowered it, whether it's to the budget level we gave him.
I think
what
Judy's saying, I'm not speaking for Judy, is that if we're going to have less people working, there's probably going to be more of a need for overtime.
Exactly, exactly. Where, I mean, these were bodies that are no longer there. I assume the what they were doing continues.
Well, I'm saying,
somebody else must be doing
them. These are vacancies now. What I'm saying is he gave us overtime through August, and his numbers are down. So he's, I'm just saying, you know, we can go back to him again, but these are exist. These are not vacancies, I read it, to be created. These are existing vacancies, and with these existing vacancies, through August, he's down on the overtime. But don't forget, we got rid of the amount of police. You know, he's done a bunch of redeployments, and things have happened, whether we agree or disagree, and the bottom line is his overtime is down. He's, I mean, thousands of hours. I mean,
but does that then mean, and then this becomes a question for this committee, that then mean we're not doing intelligence, security, and counterterrorism? Does that mean we're not doing these?
I was told that counterterrorism was being done now through the DA's office and coordinating with the federal government. We've got to ask that question.
There
was one person. He was not replaced.
It was Harry Rosenthal.
Harry Rosenthal. So that one person that had that title, that intelligence security, I think that's who it was. That's a fair point. I think this goes to, in fact, the big picture of oversight by this committee, a couple of things.
I mean, are we doing what we're supposed to be doing?
I can't talk now.
One of the things I'm not saying it's not covered. What I am saying is I couldn't tell anyone today how it is covered. Mm-hmm. But after, and obviously way before 9/11 as well, it just wasn't on everyone's mind. But after 9/11, we were in probably the strongest position we have ever been in to interface with New York City and federal sources of information having to do with terrorist activity, counterterrorism planning, and also the identification and raiding of selected hotspots here in the county. Hotspots recognized by the feds as possible targets for domestic and international terrorism. Over the years, this legislature and the county executive were briefed on different things that were going on, different ways in which the federal government and Westchester County law enforcement, as well as local law enforcement, were addressing different types of situations, were handling different types of needs. This is a daily, probably 24/7 really, function. You can't kind of do it for a couple of days each week and then take a few off. You can't handle it part-time. So, like I say, I would be shocked if it wasn't being handled, but I would feel a lot more comfortable if our board and this committee knew exactly how that function was being handled in the time since the position hasn't been filled. And I'm sure it's being handled. But I think it's something that we need to know. And the point Judy raises is a good one. Some of the other things that draw some attention, the DES piece. Now, you know, it could be that emergency management, the emergency services, the deputy commissioner, there could be that there are ways to cover a lot of different things that deputies to these highest level people cover the functions that they were assigned. The deputy, the director of office of emergency management, the same thing. But when you start getting down into the communications operator function, these are current vacancies as of the release of this addendum. The history, which I think is very important, there was a time when we operated for years at probably a level that was not wise. There was a period when we operated for a number of months at a dangerously low level of communications operators, primarily dispatchers in the 60 control room. And it got to a point, if you think back to the time around the ice storm and all the months preceding that, there were, as I mentioned last week, and it wasn't an exaggeration, it wasn't that people were assigned for 8-hour tours and they were working 10. Some were working 16, 24, some were working into the 30s at one time. They can't do the job. They're looking at computer screens in that dark, you know, kind of NASA space agency kind of setup. They're looking at computer screens, and they're being asked to be alert, paying attention to the emergency call coming in, and where that screen is telling them they can take and route, you know, equipment and resources. They're dealing with maps. They're dealing with narrative that appears on the screen. It's not wise to have people push to those levels. So what we did was, as a board, as you'll remember, we added sufficient personnel to put them in a position where they could have around the clock the right level, not an excessive level, but the right level of people to do the work that had to be done. And we got out of that dangerous situation. In the years after that, I don't remember us taking steps to add to those numbers, so I have to figure that the level remained where it should have been, and if there was a vacancy, it would have been filled. To see now that today there are 3 communication operators down, I don't know what that means. I'm not saying it's dangerous, but I'm saying that, you know, I'd like to know, is one now away from the job for a week? Is the other one away for maybe a month? You know, and we'd have to know more about how long these people have been, how long these vacancies, yeah, and what has been the result on the remaining force of people manning 60 control. If we've seen a spike in the number of hours they have to work, that's kind of heading back in the wrong direction. That's one of the things that I think is dangerous to compromise. We certainly do not want to go back to the way things were in January of 2009, I guess, was the ice storm. We certainly don't want to do that kind of thing. And I'm not suggesting that's where it is, but it's just kind of appearing on this page. It raises questions in my mind about what's the current level over there? Has it been stable? Add these vacancies to the bodies that show up each day. Do we still have that stable count? And what is the rationale for not filling them, or perhaps they're in the process of filling them, which would be okay.
Well, I mean, that's the purpose of this work session. We raise these questions now when we need to get answers, you know, in the context of this, probably in the context of this proposal, but generally it's an oversight of the Interact Committee. So we've been joined by Chairman Jenkins.
Can I just finish up?
Yeah, John in the back over here.
The other one I'd want to check on, since we've been discussing it in the Legislation Committee, is they have to abolish the provision of a position for cyber crimes. So we have to find out how that functions.
Well, that was in this year's budget.
Yeah, but who's doing the function as far as the function?
I don't think we have any more cyber crimes.
It might be, maybe it's being done through the DA's office only. That's possible. Okay. And adequately done. The other thing I will make sure we're clear on is in the original proposal, in addition to these abolished positions and vacancies, they also set forth other positions that they expect to lose through attrition or elimination. And most of those look like what you'd expect a back office function, most of them, like payroll clerk, budget specialist, things like that, office assistant, word processing. So we've got to keep...
Right, I think the commissioner made it clear that this is over time. Initially, this back office stuff is what they think they could do fairly quickly. It may even be in the budget that is what they give us.
Well, some of it's
going to be a couple of years.
Some of it's in the first year budget, but that's the commissioner mostly.
Right, but it'll be a couple of years before some of this stuff works out.
So when you look at this...
I'm sorry, John, I didn't realize it.
Just to finish up, I mean, I think coming back to Bill Ryan's point, we got to really focus on 16, 18, and 19 in the proposal, because that's what deals with this whole idea of coordination and how the, you know, trying to coordinate emergency response, which I think is important, and as we learned from 9/11. And 19 especially talks about these special operations, the hazmat, how they're going to fold those in together. I think that's something that should be done, but it's got to be done right.
Okay. Gordon, real quick, and then Bill.
Real quick statement. Bill has asked a lot of good questions, whether we have the right amount of people on staff or not, how are the cuts going to be made, affected, John, same thing. I don't know whether we're writing questions or somebody's going to review the tape and maybe pose questions, my suggestion is maybe to itemize these questions, send them both to Commissioners Longworth and Sutton ahead of time so that we're not asking
exactly.
them that questions
right.
the next time we get here, only to have to wait another week or 2 weeks for them to answer it. Let them know what we're asking ahead of time. And this way, if we can have those questions for our next meeting, this way we'll be able to go and ask both commissioners what's going on
okay.
straight then and there.
Okay. Thank you.
So maybe, I don't know if Melody or somebody's going to go over.
We'll go over it, yeah. And Beth, you know, Betsy had worked on some questions as well. Maybe we'll saw your emails. So we'll fold it. Okay. So we've got some questions.
Great.
Bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Five of the police officer vacancies on page 5, the DPS vacancies, those are September 10th, are these programmed to be filled with officers coming from the Ossining-Town merger if it were to take place. So I'm not altogether sure that those are ever bookable for savings under this, certainly this program, and certainly not for vacancies. The second question that I have is item 3 on our agenda is a resolution setting a public hearing. Are we planning on doing that today? And this will be, I assume, a public hearing purposes only.
Well, my sense, I don't think we're ready yet.
Yeah, again, sure.
My sense is once you send that out, the public thinks, you know, this is it. Even though we're saying public hearing only, I think we need to get the services in, the advisory boards, do more here before we...
We also have carefully looked at the language of the legislation, which is wrong.
We already,
Right, that's
right.
The addendum picks that up.
Yeah.
We have to change that.
Let me just touch on it. Try a couple of, maybe not answers, but Bill raised some things, and again, conversation I've had with Longworth, because this chain of command, which was an important thing, his point is, and he tells me he's got some people out of training right now, that you get to the incident. And, you know, today, because the protocols are in place, you have hazmat, Tony Sutton people, the game plan is that it's like they will be trained, it's like, what kind of incident is it? Is it, you know, the fire incident, and the police are there for, you know, crowd control and traffic, well, that, you know, that's what they're going to do. So we can push, you know, we can pursue that, but there is an answer.
Well, to that
okay,
point,
sure.
That's exactly what I was going to raise.
Right.
I think it would be helpful for this committee and all the services involved, because that's the crux of it. It's a culture issue, but what's going to happen on the ground? I think to have both Commissioner Longworth and Commissioner Sutton take 3 or 4 scenarios where there is joint command here,
right,
and just take this committee
Bill?
Through and say, we arrive on site,
what
this
happened?
Person arrives on site, what happens?
No.
And how this is currently handled and how it will be handled in future,
yeah,
because
I think
that is what the crux of the worry on the ground.
Going through examples, I think, is a good way for us, but Bill raised the point, I think, instant command, but there is an answer, but I think we need to go through those
right,
scenarios.
Right, we need to hear it at
so
the table.
So that's one thing. The other issue, so this Office of Joint Command that I also kind of, you know, in a way, can't you guys, you know, separate but work together? And on the federal model, my experience is with the federal government, when the Energy Department and Interior and EPA, we saw working issues, it went to OMB, and then I got, you know, Jimmy Carter's initials on things. You know, it would go up the chain of command, but the OMB. If we keep them separate and you have, you know, DES, DPS, all right, it goes to the deputy county executive. Now, the point was, Larry Schwartz was here. It was Larry Schwartz. It would be Kevin Plunkett or the county executive. His position is, you know, yes, that's how it goes. His preference is to have someone who really knows what's going on. You know, he's got the 3 deputies. So it's just, where do you draw that line? Is the chain of command goes up to that next level for resolution? Is the resolution, in a sense, still within a department with experience, or is the resolution, as it was, frankly, with Larry Schwartz and in other areas, where it goes up the line? So, again, there are different models. Where do you? Because ultimately, something may have to get resolved at a higher level, and where does it get resolved? So those are outstanding questions. That's any. In the comments, and we're going to get all the questions together, and I think, you know, walking through those scenarios is more. Pete, go ahead.
I just have one other question. We raised this at the very first meeting that Chairman Kaplowitz had, and I'd like to keep it on the record. When we looked at the people in the original proposal who were targeted for elimination. Some of those people have already been told, by what I have learned directly, that they will not have a job in another year or two. And it seems to me, you know, we are all for consolidating and lowering costs and cutting. We just reduced the size of the county workforce by 10% voluntarily. There's a lot of work to be done, and I had public conversations with Mr. Oros. But again, I want to put this on our record, that if there are people who are currently on staff who are being viewed as dispensable to that department in this merger, that this government would make every effort to find another place for them. You know, because we're talking about real people. We're talking about people with mortgages, with kids in college, you know, and the last thing we want to do is have more unemployed people, more people out on the street. So, you know, we're down 10%. If we can find places for these folks, I would like a commitment from the administration that we try and do it.
Did they tell us there were going to be layoffs in the first year? Just that
they reference attrition over the
They
two
talk
or three
about
years, right?
People retiring and normal attrition.
They say there were three positions in 2011, and those were from vacancies that they were not planning on filling.
Well, but there are three people in the department who I've spoken with who've been told that their positions will not.
Well, if they look, if in fact this goes ahead, they're consolidating the HR, the budget, the back office stuff. Then presumably there are people in those back office jobs. Then,
if you look at this projected savings, there's four positions being quote reduced for end of year one. That's the commissioner. We know about him. The other one is program administrator, fire services, code enforcement, senior maintenance mechanic,
yeah,
staff assistant, emergency volunteer services. So those are the three positions.
Well, we need to go through, like, it raises code enforcement issue. Well, maybe it was moving to risk management, and I've heard they don't necessarily want them. They don't want them. So
it doesn't make sense, by the way, to me, moving code enforcement to risk management.
Well, yeah, so it may be a vacancy in this department, but it's not a real vacancy. It's going someplace else. And in terms of independence, if we're enforcing stuff at DPW facilities, maybe it does have to stay at DPS. Those are the real nitty-gritty that before we were to move this forward, if we are going to move forward, we need to, you know, clarify those issues. So I think a lot of details we still have to, you know, work out. I think this was helpful. We got some good questions on the table. Got to get answers. But as we move forward, as we decide we still want to keep moving forward, we dig deeper and deeper as to where is the code enforcement person going. I mean, at some point, we draw a line of micromanaging somewhere, but there's a policy to say, is the code enforcer, I think there's judges we can make, is where is the right place for independence and everything else that makes sense. That it's tough to enforce, have your own commission saying, you know, don't go there. Anyway, we're just about at 10 o'clock. Sheila, go ahead.
I know, I'm not a member of the committee. Chairman, if I may just comment. I have to say, I think Legislator Harcum's comments and suggestions were of an utmost importance. I think if someone can create a list of possible incidents and scenarios, it would be extremely helpful, not only to us, but to the fire department and to the law enforcement. I think, and it could be wrong, I'm certainly not an expert on the state statute, but there might also exist conflicts, you know, statutory conflicts, with reference to who is to respond, for example, if it is like a hazmat situation. The fire department, statutory, the chief would determine the cause of origin and take command. However, if law enforcement decides to deem it a crime scene, the fire department is back off. And that is a major area of concern that I truly need to be addressed. So I would just highly recommend that someone follow up on
the right. And the questions, and well, the questions between what is it today, what happens today, and what we're told is some just on-the-ground conflicts, and how does resolve it, and does resolve in a way that everybody's okay with it.
Yes, suggestion, Jeff, for going forward, can we get these questions out and give them maybe 2 weeks to come back in October 3rd?
That would be smart.
Give them 2 weeks, get these questions together. Can we also ask the county attorney to give us any legislation that affects, you know, this whole thing?
County attorney just walked in.
Well, yes, if there any
conflicts. We should write it in, as you say, document it, and send it to the committee.
We need to know what legislation governs response to, you know, incidents, you know, from the fire side, from the police side.
Okay, well, any conflicts, identity conflicts with state law, current and state law, I think it's the same way. Okay, in terms of scheduling.
Another question. Should we invite in the fire advisory board, too?
Yeah, so I was hoping even next week, because we really need to keep moving this forward. Yeah. Again, we don't have a big time slot, but if we start at 9 o'clock and maybe bring in Melanie.
Next week we're supposed to just ShotSpotter.
ShotSpotter. Have you already, I mean, there have been a request to for us to get an update on the... on the, you know, the gun, the shot, the gun detection, but we could bring in the local people, right? We heard from the county folks last time.
2 weeks is really a delay of time, and we got to pose these questions. I think the answers are
okay. But keep thinking about it. But next week we will be next week to get an update on the Yonkers, Mount Vernon, you know,
shot
detection from, I got the local. We really need to hear from the local folks as to how it's working. But we had a request that we do that. So we will do that next Monday in 2 weeks. Hopefully, at that time, probably the fire, EMS, you know, the advisory boards, and any of the stakeholders that want to come in and address us and get everything else on the table. So there'll be plenty of opportunities, everybody, to make their
points. Can I put something, and not, it's obviously not for discussion this morning, but I know we all read yesterday about the Austin.
Yes, I did. Let me just say what I put on the table. There was, I guess, general consensus.
Just to have.
I equated more like a treaty, where the president negotiates a treaty, then Congress will get it. We will get it, but not to interfere with the town vote on it. So we did talk about it. All right. There's no minutes, right? Okay, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Made by Mr. Noda, seconded by Legislator Myers.
No.
I'm sorry, Legislator Burton.
Thank you, Captain.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Please stand. Adjourn. 10:02.
Very good.
October 3rd.
October 3rd. It's the first and third.
Good meeting. So you were installed formally?
Oh, yes.
Congratulations.
This is like unending the stuff you got to do.
You probably got to do a lot of traveling around the state, right?
It remains to be seen, but there's going to be some.
And some.